This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. And with me as always are Nick and Becca.
Hey.
Hello.
We've got a great show for you this week. Before we do that, Nick, do we have any new patrons?
We do, yes. John joined our Epic patronage and is backing us at $10 a month. And we are very grateful for that and excited to have him be part of the team. And yeah. And if anyone else wants to support the show by becoming a patron, just go to patreon.com/iconicpodcast and join the ranks of our patrons and get early access to our outlines that we use for these recordings, as well as early access to the episodes themselves. And you can even join in our monthly patron game.
Yeah. So this week, we've got a great episode for you. We're going to do our fourth random encounter set in Tanar. This will be towards the end of Champion Tier. And when we last left off, Becca, do you want to give us a recap and what our hook is for this adventure?
Yeah. The last adventure that we had, we were exploring an abandoned temple that had suddenly resurfaced and the adventurers had access to. And deep within the bowels of the temple, we found a lost hero, possibly one from a previous age. We kind of established he was dwarven, and we were going to return him to Gatemark, a dwarven city, where he could hopefully lead us to a portal to the Plains of Ash and Dust.
Now, this was one that was stuck inside an item, correct?
Or it was stuck in... He was stuck inside something battling a demon.
Like a Maiar crystal or something.
Mm-hmm. So Gatemark is a dwarven town. It used to be sort of a kind of an exterior town that served as like a trade point between the dwarves of the mountain and the rest of Tanar. So what icons are going to be interested in this city, in this mind, in this portal? What do you guys see in your head as kind of being the main either helpful or antagonistic icons?
I was thinking the possessed king. So the dwarven king that is possessed by one of the nearly gone and dead dwarven gods, he would be very interested and possibly jealous of this returned hero. What kind of power does this hero have? And are they there to usurp the king?
How big of a threat are they?
Yeah. How big of a threat? And does this dying god want to switch bodies from the current king to perhaps this hero who might be a bit more powerful?
But that king doesn't have, or that hero doesn't have a body yet, right?
I think that was left a little unclear at the end of the last session. Okay. So possibly not. Maybe the lost hero is in a sword stuck somewhere, or they do have a body, but it's not full. Or
I had the possessed king as more of a helpful icon. If the dwarves are trying to reclaim this mine and they haven't been able to have control of it for a while, that the heroes have to come in and aid the possessed king and get his sign off and his agreement that, hey, yeah, this is okay. You can go in there. I want to help you with this. And maybe some positive icon relationships as opposed to maybe conflicted or negative ones.
Well, I think this would be more of a what's the alignment or ambiguity or a relationship of the dwarven hero that was released and not so much maybe the possessed king himself. Mm-hmm. You know, because if this hero that the players have released, assuming they're going to want to be helpful and get back into the plane of dust and ash, maybe be reunited with their body subsequently or something along those lines. If that hero doesn't have a favorable view of the possessed king, that might end up influencing some of the party's perspective as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And whatever relationship your party has with the possessed king will also, I guess I'm just kind of stuck on the fact that a lot of my adventures are always antagonistic to any NPC I give them. So
That's fair. Nick, what about you? What are you seeing?
We've brought the Red Alchemist into pretty much all the adventures we've had up to this point, and it makes sense to me to continue to leverage that icon, especially in regards to, you know, the past adventures that we've done. It's been trying out different monster combinations, mining for different things, and considering you're delving into these dwarven mines, this might be the one chance that she has to get in there, whereas previously she's just not allowed. And, this might be the opportunity for her to somehow get into the mines and get access to whatever's down there. And I was also thinking that using the Cult of the Firstborn might be an interesting thing, especially since we're talking about a portal to the plane of dust and ash. You know, that portal might end up being the key to giving birth to that first demon inside the Interdict Namus.
I think there's two things here kind of at play. There's the mines itself and then the portal, which we hope this adventure ends at, so that when you go into Epic Tier, your adventures are going into this portal. So not only do you have to consider who's interested in the mines and what do the mines hold, but going into this next adventure, whatever icons are following your adventures are going to be very interested in this portal as well.
Yeah. So who did you have interested in the portal?
I had Demoloth.
That's where I was going as well. But I see Nick's point. Any sort of interplanar travel can be used to sort of get around the laws and the interdict of Gnomus.
Yeah. And with Demoloth, I mean, it is the plane of dust and ashes, the plane of the dead. And as Lord of the Dead / Undead, he would be very interested in having a ready access portal and maybe even wanting to bring back his own champion that has been lost and stuck in that plane.
And Mark added into the notes, the guild, because the guild gets its fingers into everything. And I would agree with that.
For sure.
Do you have any other icons you'd throw in there, JM?
No, the two that I was going to use are the Possessed King and Demoloth for kind of those reasons. So, all right, so we have Gatemark. And again, right, the dwarves of Tanar are sort of this regressing, this almost barbaric civilization dwelling in the bones of what used to be, you know, the great dwarven clans. And so Gatemark has kind of become like those who are trying to fight against it, they kind of leave out of the mountains. They're living on the surface. This is sort of a trade town. What sort of things did you guys want to put in to Gatemark as features? Like, what are things that adventurers would encounter in this once great trade city?
Well, one of the things that I was thinking of, just features of geography, is just maybe injecting in that there's a lot of earthquakes in this area. And I liked the contrast between that along with the dwarven structures and maybe just the fact that, you know, up to maybe now, there hasn't been any buildings that have collapsed. I mean, that the dwarven construction is just that good that doesn't matter that there's an earthquake that happens, you know, twice a week. I mean, everyone just kind of moves on with their lives and there's nothing to really worry about. But maybe something is starting to shift and, you know, a building collapsed and no, and that's the first time that anybody in generations has any record of. I can see that playing out in both, you know, question of what's causing these buildings to collapse, but then also kind of revealed that the dwarves of today are not the dwarves who built this and kind of being able to leverage some of that too.
Well, that could also give you an interesting new way to get into the mines, right? The building collapse and reveals a long forgotten tunnel or something like that. Definitely something an icon relationship could play into. What about you, Becca?
I had the idea that the Possessed King's Council, part of it resides here as one of the major surface towns for the dwarves. Anything that he wants to have a meeting for or conversation with any of the other icons or players in the area, it's probably going to be held in Gatemark versus deep in Crandock Hold. And so when they get to town, someone hears about this adventuring party and hears what they've done. And the next thing you know, your adventurers are in front of a council town pleading their case to be able to go into the mines. Because outsiders aren't allowed, and definitely not you tall elves and...
It is lucky for all of the tall races that dwarves always build to like a scale for giants. That was built to their ego and not to their stature.
Is this still true in Tanar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is lucky then.
Well, right? The dwarves of yesteryear did at least.
That's right.
Right.
Mark had just a separate area of town called the Hole. There's a dwarf part of town and a non-dwarf part of town. And you've got to find some way in to this hold in order to gain access to, one, the interior of the mountain, and two, into the deeper mines. So
I really liked his hook about maybe needing to find a relative of the hero that you guys have released and maybe, you know, getting into some sort of action to restore honor to the family and to the dwarf itself or the hero itself. I really liked that hook.
Yeah, I did too. My feature was basically, you know, Gatemark has a large population of dwarves, which is what you would expect. And then as you step into the part that lies inside the city, you get the feeling that there was a lot, there's room for thousands more dwarves. And even the entire population of the city would be dwarfed, pun intended, by the holdings and the streets and the avenues inside the mountain. And so as you kind of go in there, like when you meet somebody, if you meet somebody, it's a dwarf. but they're few and far between.
I like that idea of having like whole sections of town just being completely unused, mm-hmm. or maybe just the riffraff for wandering there. That's where the, you know, if there's homeless dwarves, maybe that's where they're kind of camping out. Yeah, I can see that being really interesting to have a party go through there and maybe even have a montage through what do you guys encounter in that? I mean, what do you discover? This is not a place that's trafficked. It's not even a place that's been explored recently, but what do you find? You know, remnants of that past glory and evidence of current decay and maybe who knows what else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the Feather Range Mountains, what are some things that you would seed the area with as the group is getting closer to it? What are some features of the mountains?
I was thinking the closer you get to Gatemark, the more opulent it looks. They have had access to these mines that have held untold treasures. And it's not that big of a deal to them. And so the closer you get to Gatemark, the more opulent it seems. And nobody who is a native there seems to really care. But please don't take our stop sign. Like, come on, right. Be reasonable here. Also, just to kind of using that to tempt and almost force possibly players into a confrontation, either with someone else who's attempting to steal from the dwarves, or if they themselves do the stealing. Okay, now you're in front of the council.
Right.
And you've got to atone for your actions.
I think it'd be interesting to have a scene play out where, you know, they do encounter somebody who's, you know, taking gemstones off of a mural of the wall, and have the dwarves be more concerned that the mural is being defaced than the gemstones themselves are being taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really paints a contrast between expectation of what is wealth and, you know, mm-hmm. in different cultures.
Yeah. What mm-hmm. has value to the dwarves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine was basically an encounter with elementals, put together a fight with elementals around this broken standing stone, and maybe foreshadow the standing, like you've seen these standing stones on your way in. Well, it definitely looks like someone attacked the standing stone, and the standing stone has elven script, but is definitely dwarven construction, and that the elementals kind of came out of this thing, kind of seed the fact that there once was an alliance between dwarves and elves, and that the Feather Range and Estolon and this entire area around it, the reason it's so verdant is because they're controlling elementals. And if this network starts to break down, who knows what's going to be unleashed and how angry they're going to be for however long they've been bound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, players should be aware that there was that alliance with the temple, because it was an elf and dwarf fight against Demoloth that mm-hmm. sunk this temple.
Right.
So it should be in the back of their mind, and maybe to make sure that things don't go further south.
Mark put an underground lake is in the area, which, considering how dry and desolate the desolates are, this could be a major revelation to the tribes and people who live in and around Gatemark.
And certainly would be a source of conflict to be able to wade through with your players about, you know, if word gets out that there's this huge reservoir of water, I mean, mm-hmm. there might end up being a new attack on Gatemark by the people of the Desolates, because they're that desperate. They're mm-hmm. ready for some aquifers, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I've already talked about the earthquakes in the area. And in my mind, I was thinking as the earth is shifting against itself, you know, it potentially could maybe cause a lot of electrical buildup that would play out later on in the mines as they're kind of navigating the underground caverns and inner ways. So, and as we get deeper into the mine, you could talk through a little bit more about how that plays out.
Now let's move into NPCs that the party can meet in Gatemark. My idea was a group of Imperial Hands. So the Empress, she has agents who work throughout Centauri for her, throughout the continent, and they are basically soldiers/adventurers on the Imperial roster. And I've used a number of these in some of the games that you've played in, Nick, and I just thought it would be Gatemark would be one of those good places. If something major is brewing, the Empress would have her hand, one of her hands there. And it should be a warning for anyone who maybe has icon relationships with the Empress that, okay, something big is going down here, but necessarily what it may be, it could be related to the portal. It could be related to the possessed king, or even the PCs returning with a dwarven hero. So
a good way of leveraging whatever the players are bringing to the table, mm-hmm. or wherever the campaign is at this point.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of introducing a small boy named Belbrek. I was also thinking that maybe one of the features inside of Gatemark would be this stone tree forest. These trees that are made of stone, but somehow are alive and growing. And this boy lives there. Nobody's really sure where he came from, you know, who takes care of him or anything like that. But he's always in and around there, but is also popping up in various other places around Gatemark. Just seems to have a way of getting around town. Mm-hmm. And yeah, not quite sure who he is or what his motivations are, but probably could be used for information or asking a favor of or some other hook like that.
Cool. What about you, Becca?
I had someone on the council who's actually sympathetic to the party and this found hero, and we can even tie them back to the hero's family. Like, oh, this is my great, however many times, lost grandfather. Like, we've always had members on this council, but if you could elevate my status, I can make some really good changes around here. Hmm. Trust me. And again, I think it depends on how political you want to play it or your players want to play it. But you could get into some very interesting political intrigue.
Or at the very least, maybe just a side quest. You know, mm-hmm. if you need the council's permission to go into the mines or seek out this portal, and you need that one vote to break the tie, this might be the person who's kind of on the fence, but, you know, doing the right thing. You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Swing the vote in your favor.
Mm-hmm. And possibly have you interact with the hands if you're not already planning on it, and kind of get all these pieces to come together.
So we've said that the mines are the deep mines where this portal is. They're locked off. The dwarves haven't been able to access them for a very long time. What are some rumors that we can offer listeners and those who are playing through using this adventure, however they may be using it, to act as additional hooks for the PCs? What have they heard about the mines?
I was thinking it was more of what they haven't heard. They haven't ever really heard why the deep mines were locked up, but there is possibly mire down there, or there is some sort of magical energy vein that if the dwarves were able to hack into, their engineering would go back to the way it was in the previous ages. But when asked, well, why aren't you down there? There's no real reason for that.
I was thinking about having the players maybe find some scrap of paper or parchment, some map of the old mines. And as we were talking maybe about having portions of the city being completely uninhabited, maybe that's where they find this, or it's surfaced to some sort. And when they compare it against the current maps of the mines, there's some inconsistencies. There's some caverns or mine shafts that exist on the old map, but not on the new map. Maybe a large cavern that's marked with like Great Digger or something like that, where it could be a promise of something good. It might also be a threat of stay away from this.
A warning of some sort.
And that might also be why they haven't been able to get down to the deep mines, is because they've never found the right entryway, and it's because it's been sealed up for so long that nobody even knows where it is anymore.
Yeah, I like that. Mine is just that the dwarves of this area had some sort of metal that they pulled out of the mines, and they haven't pulled anything. I mean, they haven't done anything with it in an age or two because they don't have the resources to. They're far lesser than they once were. But that this metal, whether it's adamantine or something like that, it's definitely not of Tanar. And so somebody in town is willing to pay a lot of money if the players bring back any of this metal for them. Hmm. And that kind of ties into the monster I'm planning on using. So
yeah, Mark had made notes that perhaps there are digging noises. Those who go into the mines hear echoes of their axe picks against stone further and deeper down, and therefore mine shaft X is haunted.
Right.
Don't do it.
And then Mark, also moving into our next section, picked up on that as one of the features for the mines, that the haunted noises are actually something that can help the PCs, whatever that ends up being. I think I would use have people cash in an icon relationship, mm-hmm. or have everybody roll icon relationships, and the one that has the most generated, that would be who is in this haunted mine shaft to kind of go forward from there.
I like the idea of having something be haunted, especially as we're taking this into the plains of Dust and Ash. Having some sort of trapped spirit or ghost mm-hmm. or something like that would be a good way of leveraging the players to do something else. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be that the spirit is saying, take me with you. I got lost on the way and I don't know where it is. Please take me with you. Or maybe it could be take a message to somebody. This might be a way for, you know, as they're going into the plane, maybe they need to find something and bring it back to the spirit. I can see a lot of ways of leveraging this haunted aspect of the mines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, is there any features or NPCs in the mine that you guys would want to include in this adventure?
I had the idea that as they get into the deep mines, they find an old excavation site that has been abandoned and clearly in a hurry. It looked like the dwarves dropped everything and ran. Well, why would they do that? And perhaps in this exploration, you come across a dwarf that isn't as dwarfy or dwarven as all the other ones up closer to the surface are. And it's clear he's been experimented on, perhaps by the Red Alchemist. But he tells the players that he was sent here in order to collect venom from the different things that live deep beneath the earth. And perhaps he's not as sane as one might hope, because he's been down here by himself for quite some time.
I think one of the things I was kind of envisioning, well, I guess kind of two things that features or rooms that you might encounter. One being, having encountered the stone tree forest up in Gate Mark, and where the trees maybe are kind of stunted, or maybe more sapling size, finding a cavernous room where you can't see the top of the cavern, but it's just row after row after row of these trees. And I mean, these are like massive columns. Mm-hmm. And obviously these have been growing for a significant amount of time. And at one point in eons past, maybe had even been farmed, some sort of arbor, which you kind of leaves it open-ended about why, what are these used for, you know, all that sort of thing. We talked earlier about having statical electricity being built up in the midst of all these earthquakes and the earth grinding against each other, and somehow maybe having that electricity be feeding these trees, or in other caverns where there's a lot of stalactites and stalagmites, not so much mining shafts, but just natural caverns, a lot of arcing electricity jumping back and forth.
Very cool.
So those paladins in their plate armor are going to...
Yeah, I was thinking that it would be interesting having or what sort of effect that might have on the character's night vision as they're walking through, where their eyes have adjusted to the dim light and then all of a sudden it's super bright and they're, you know, maybe dazed a little bit. And then yes, any metal armor or metal weaponry could potentially draw a charge their direction.
All right. Well, let's get into monsters. I really thought it would be neat to use the star masks in here from Bestiary 2. Mm-hmm. Something crashed here long ago. The dwarves find it and it started converting some of them. And that's why they left, or at least one of the reasons that they left. And so the Starmass zombies down here are actually a little bit closer to real zombies in the fact that, you know, a lot of them are dwarven corpses that have been reanimated and brought under this Starmass control. That's actually the kind of the encounter idea I have, where the players start fighting things that they think are undead. And they respond to things like turn undead or any of the necromancer things that affect only the undead. But there's something wrong and off about them, and eventually leads them back to the star mask infestation.
I like how that still ties back in with this main focus of heading to
the plains of Dust and Ash. Yep. And that's maybe why they're able to reanimate even the dead corpses, is because there's something leaking from this portal that makes it easier to do that thing.
Mm-hmm. I was drawn to the fungaloids, and I know they're as statted, they're not quite the upper end of champion tier, but you know, you can always scale stuff. I just like the idea of this complete culture that has been surviving apart from anybody else. And now all of a sudden, maybe in that haunted mine shaft, something broke through. And now they have all of these fungaloid creatures wandering around, exploring this, you know, 'cause they thought maybe that's where they were at, you know, interacting with the various other explorers that are down there, the dwarves. Just like the idea of having that sort of that new culture that you could introduce in, and maybe even have that maybe a political aspect to it of negotiating a treaty or trying to calm Ingers down. You know, if that wall that had been broken through was actually into somebody's house or something like that. I don't know. There's just that particular monster has always caught my attention, and I thought this would be a good place that you could inject that as something kind of as a twist to expectations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially after exploring Gatemark and how empty it is, and therefore assuming nothing else lives here, than to find a whole nother culture and species or two thriving down in the deep dark. Okay, maybe it's not that it's abandoned, but now it's super dangerous. For my idea, the Red Alchemist experiment upon dwarf is sent in here in order to collect a venom. And I said from purple worms, because those things are always scary.
They're awesome.
And maybe half of the earthquakes are real tectonic plates shifting, and the other half are these worms that are getting closer and closer to the surface. And man, reading the stats on those purple worms, those things are terrifying.
They really are.
So excited to use them. I mean, I don't want to see them. It's fine. Yeah, so the dwarf calls forth the purple worm and larvae.
All right, so what is really going on? We have the players arrive here at Gatemark, find a way into the mines, and then into the mines. I mean, that could be as long of an interlude as you want, something to do with montage or put in four battles so that they have a whole level up before they get to these deeper mines and start working their way through the purple worms and the star masks and the fungaloids. But eventually we have this idea that there is a portal open to the Plains of Dust and Ash, and it is important to Demeloth. What do you guys see going on there?
Well, part of it, I think, is that the portal is not always available. Like, it's only open for a certain time, you know, whether it be an alignment of the stars or something to that effect. But for whatever reason, it's open and it's available now. And the pressure then is we have to get in and we have to get through this and then back out before this opportunity closes. And having that type of focal point of time pressure would end up leveraging a lot of attention concentrated at this point in time.
As for what's really going on, I think that would be the jumping point for your next adventure. When the adventurers step through this portal, do they take this lost dwarven hero with them? Do they take the spirit that they found in the haunted mine? Do they leave anyone to guard the portal behind them? And do they know the rules of the Plane of Dust and Ash? And one of those big rules is the same number who enter have to be the same number who leave. And so if anyone else leaves the portal while the heroes are inside, now one less of them can leave. And so depending on how and who they take through with them could really spark the next adventure. And is this dwarven hero a good person? Is it not? Is the haunted spirit that they found a actual beneficial spirit, or does it turn out to be one of the lords of the plains and now he will summon his armies, or now he'll take you back to his mansion and help you out? And so I think there's a lot of mystery surrounding the portals, that drawing on different icon relationships and even drawing on, all right, what have you, the players, heard about this portal? I mean, give them several sessions to kind of figure that out. And then some of them are true and some of them are not. And I think there's a lot of mystery that surrounds anything that has to do with the undeath and why would Demeloth want it?
Yeah, I like the idea of maybe even leaving why is this portal open or why does it exist to an icon relationship role to see for your game, what is the importance here? I do think that we should have something there with Demeloth actively engaged with the portal on one side or other, right? Because, I mean, if the players come here and, I mean, it could be that there's signs that they've already gone through, and that's the impetus for the players to go through afterwards, that maybe not even that we got here too late, or there was no time to do this. This was going on while we were at the temple, but something has already gone through. And that's not okay. And that's kind of the stepping tier off of this tier into epic tier.
Mm-hmm. I just had the thought about potentially leveraging the Empress in this situation with her hand that was there encountered in Gatemark. And maybe his mission either takes place inside the Plains of Dust and Ash, that the Empress is finally moving against Demeloth, and this has to take place inside of his domain. Or maybe this person is to go and retrieve a fallen hand who has important information regarding Demeloth or something along those lines. And this person is going to be like self-sacrificial. You know, he knows that he's going to go in and exchange places with the hand that's already there and comes back out.
Well, that's something interesting to think about, because the rules of Tanar for resurrection are that one person goes in and one person goes out. Is this something different, right? Because this is an open portal. So this is something that, this is more like an extraplanar, like rift or gap or something that seems to violate the rest of the rules.
Mm-hmm. And just about every icon is going to be interested in that, either closing it if you're the spell queen, or bringing something from the other side if you are the guild, or using it as another way to get beyond the interdict nomis if you are the firstborn in the cult. There's a lot about this portal that can be super dangerous.
Yeah, and I like the idea of the adventurers get in here and everyone else who's interested in this now can access it, because the adventurers are the ones who found the way. And there's a number of other groups or rival iconic agents who are, oh, excellent, we're going to follow these guys. These are the ones who are going to get us in. And that could be the big fight or encounter at the end, this idea of, well, you, congratulations, you found it, but you sort of found it for everyone, not just yourself.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the demand is such because it does violate the rules that everyone is used to playing by. It's like all of a sudden the opportunities and options are wide open and everyone's trying to scramble to take advantage of it.
Yeah, this could be a good time for either a ritual spell or some icon relationships to close this thing and just assume that you're going to find another way back.
Mm-hmm. And there's the rules in 13th Age for clerics for bringing people back from the dead are pretty strict, and clerics are rather hesitant to revive someone, but perhaps that could change. And if your clerics realize that, man, who would you bring back?
Mm-hmm. Any treasures you would want to put in this adventure for players to uncover?
I had the idea that, I mean, it's said in the bestiary with the purple worm is that this thing eats things. Purple worms eat magic items all the time. So what's in the stomach? And I said something perhaps really old, maybe from another age. And I'd stumble upon the idea of a lucky weapon that crits on both a natural 20 and a natural 7. As just kind of one of those things that it's quirky, it's unusual, and it's not from around here or this time.
And I like that. I mean, it seems fun that it's not just in an expanded crit range, but you actually are looking for two specific numbers that that's going to do that on. I was thinking that maybe they found a piece of a stalagmite crafted into some sort of weapon. You know, give you the normal +2 bonus to hit and damage, but then also being able to, once a battle, deal an extra 2d8 lightning damage on a hit or miss. And the quirk is that you find shiny metallic objects fascinating.
Nice. I was thinking that anybody who goes through the gate, look to your 13th Age Glorantha book and pick up a death gift. Like, this is the sort of thing that, like, passing into the Plains of Dust and Ash while alive is definitely something that should change a person. So that's kind of where I was going with that.
That's a great idea.
All right. So I think we've come up with this one, that we have a reason, you know, what questions are going on, who has already gone through this portal, what do we do with it, how do we chase down who's on the other side? All of those are normally where we would end the adventure, but we've kind of got a good idea here. And I think much like other 13th Age campaigns, by the time you're stepping from champion to epic tier, you've got your own storyline mm-hmm. that your group has. And so they're going to know who's on the other side of this thing and who are they following, even if it's a B plot kind of running adjacent to your main story.
Yes. Yeah. Your players and their icons are going to run a lot of this. And I really look forward to hearing how it changes and works with other people's games.
Yeah. If any of you are giving these adventures a try or have any thoughts or feedback, leave us a message on the website. Leave us a message on Patreon if you're a patron. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this idea of a story arc set in Tanar with these random encounters. And we're starting season 4 soon here in a couple of months, and we're already starting to plan ahead. So we'd love some feedback and insight on that. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.